Aaron Foley, and you're listening to episode 14 of Sports Without Balls. I decided just to whisper that part. We have a guest host, you guys, and ladies and gentlemen, it's Dana Goldberg!
Hello, Aaron Foley.
Dana is one of my favorite stand-up comics in the universe. We perform a lot together. She knows sports, and this is going to be one of my favorite podcasts of all time.
Let's do this.
No
Let's
pressure.
Do this.
No pressure.
I feel good about it. I stretched before I came in.
Nice. You just stretched out the hamstrings and the quads?
That's it.
Rolled the ankles a little around?
Just a little. Don't need my Achilles tendon blowing in the first 5 minutes of the show.
Oh, the old Achilles blowout.
Half the people were like, I need to look that up. I don't even know what she just said.
I think it's from the funny bone to the elbow, the Achilles. Just kidding, people. I know some anatomy. Now, Dana, you're an athlete. We've played softball together.
We have, which was comical on its own.
Two lesbos playing softball.
It's unheard of.
Shocking. Dana is a big soccer fan and a big soccer player. So here we go, listener. Here's the breakdown for this episode. We're going to talk about soccer. We've got a lot of women's soccer news. We've got a lot of men's soccer news. And there's usually not a lot of American men's soccer news, which is really exciting.
Absolutely.
Then we're going to talk about the WNBA playoffs heating up. They start Thursday. Then we're going to do a couple stories about how athletes make so much money and we get paid in drink tickets. Maybe touch on tennis. And then who knows? And then we'll probably just high five.
We'll see where it goes.
Throw down the mics and drink more.
Let's do it. We'll chest bump. We're going to chest bump.
We're going to totally chest bump.
I wore my sports bra.
Nice.
I feel like it's necessary. Although I do feel like that I'm judged. Because I feel like if you're wearing a sports bra before 2 hours of an event or after 2 hours of an event that you haven't participated in, like there's a little clue you might be a lesbian. Like if you're wearing a sports bra 2 hours prior or 2 hours after.
Okay.
I think you need to look at it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because we're just wearing them.
Well, here's the thing. This morning I went for coffee and it's really hot outside. So I was just wearing like a tank top and like sneakers and shorts. So I automatically put on my sports bra and I was walking. I was like, wow, I got my sports bra on, but I'm just getting coffee.
Yeah, but you're telling the story as if you were straight and that this should be... So this should be an exception. You're not helping. You're like, so what does that say about me? I'm like, it says so you and your lady might have had a rough. What do you mean?
Wait, so that just means I'm real comfortable in a sports bra.
Or it's hot, or you expected some sort of a competition, like in the coffee shop. Like nothing we do is just like, yeah, I'm going to get coffee. It's like, this is a sport. Like you're going to have to beat out someone in line. You may get into an altercation with the person serving you coffee.
All right. I didn't see this one coming, but
you
I
had
like
a
it.
Beer at 11 a.m.
No, I mean, it was 1:30 in all fairness. It's almost 2 o'clock. It's almost 2 o'clock. But every time I put on my sneakers and shorts, which is pretty much all the time, I just put on a sports bra.
Yeah, that whole sports bra theory is just, it's a horrible comedy.
I'm just saying, ladies out there, straight ladies, we have a lot of straight ladies that listen to this podcast.
Yes.
I have no idea. Carol, fact check how many straight ladies listen to our sports podcast. Oh, God, Carol. She's fine. You guys, Carol's fine.
She's a fast drinker.
She's back. She had a spritzer. She's slurring a little. Nobody panic. So that's going to be something I'll have to really pay attention to. You might straight ladies, if you're constantly wearing sports bras, you might need to start making out with your lady neighbors.
Yeah, well, and I feel like after a certain age, they just start to wear baseball caps, too. Like, the caps goes with it, and the only difference is maybe it's bedazzled or it's pink.
Right.
It's still a baseball cap. And then it's super confusing because you're, like, lesbian or Midwestern housewife. Like, we don't know.
Right. It could go either way.
Yeah.
Either
and if,
way.
If they're listening now, then...
Maybe both.
You might have lost a listener.
Or gained 14. Let's talk about soccer.
Let's do this.
You played soccer. Tell us about your soccer playing days.
Oh, my soccer team they started when I was 5.
Wow.
We were the little bumblebee soccer team that, you know, literally if you've ever watched 5-year-olds play, the entire team is running in a giant swarm and a ball will shoot out. It looks like a rugby scrum and the ball will shoot out and then the entire formation just actually moves to where the ball is now.
It's adorable watching little kids
play
soccer. I love
watching them. It's phenomenal. So I started when I was super young and then through high school. I played through high school and
this is Albuquerque, right?
This is Albuquerque, yes.
Okay.
And I was a goalie for 15 years.
No way. Yeah. I was also a goalie.
I have a theory about that as well.
Oh, God. Wow, this is interesting.
Yeah, so I was a goalie. We're good with our hands.
Yeah, well, alrighty.
Moving on.
Carol, water, please.
Carol, we need water. So what happened in high school is that I tore my quad. I wanted to play field for a while, because after playing goalie for 15 years, it wreaks some havoc on your self-esteem, because you realize the ball has to get through 10 other players, but when you get scored on, or maybe it's just the Jew in me, I'm like, that was my fault. I should have blocked every ball that ever comes to me. I should have had that.
Can't get to Dana.
I should have had that.
Right.
So I wanted to play on the field. I started playing striker, and I like to score.
Yeah.
I was getting scored on. I'm like, let's do this. Like, yeah. I want you to feel my pain.
Let's turn the tables,
let's turn
compadre.
The tables. Oh, and I was such an obnoxious goalie. We had one of the best soccer teams in the city. So the ball rarely crossed half field. I would lay down in the goal during the game.
No.
Yep. Just have my head leaning on my hand, elbow on the grass, and just
are you
picking
kidding?
Grass. Oh, it was so obnoxious. And then every once in a while, the ball would come close, and I'd get back up, and then I'd lay back down.
You laid down in the goal? How is that acceptable?
It was not acceptable. We had a really good club team. We ended up I remember we beat a team 15-0. They weren't even speaking to each other by the time they left the field.
Oh, my God.
It was horrible. Our team was stacked. I think we got every good player in Albuquerque. And
It
was stacked. But it was also Albuquerque. So, you know.
Well, you never know. I don't know what the sports are like in Albuquerque.
We don't have any professional teams, which is why you don't know any of them.
Right.
Go Lobos.
Albuquerque Lone Stars.
Everyone's a Lobo.
Yes. University of
New Mexico.
New Mexico.
Yeah.
They have a good basketball team, though.
They had a great basketball team, and they probably still do. The coach was from El Dorado, which was a high school team that was doing phenomenally well. He's not there anymore, but he brought the girls to the Sweet 16 on a couple of occasions, and
nice.
Really stepped up their winning streak. It was awesome.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
Goalie. I had no idea you were goalie. Okay, so then you become striker.
Ah, and I was taking a penalty kick, not a penalty shot, but like a free kick that I don't think I'd stretched enough for, and I actually, when I impacted the ball, I tore my quad.
Oh my, wow.
And they had to carry me off the field, and so then I started playing keeper again.
Yeah.
And I had to learn how to kick with my left foot, which was really interesting. It was my left foot of soccer.
What?
I was
tell me you did it with an Irish brogue.
I was playing the piano on the field. I did. I was like, pass the ball down here. I don't even know what that was. It was a mix between Scottish.
I feel like it was somewhat of an Irish brogue.
Just a little bit. And I learned how to do all of that left footed. And then after I graduated from high school, I pursued and continued to pursue my marching band career.
Wow.
And I
That's
stopped.
Right. You were in the marching band.
Yeah,
I really want to post those photos online. Dana showed me some pictures of her marching band, and wow.
I look like Manny from Modern Family. Let's just say it. Like, if it ever...
I didn't say that.
Yeah, I didn't own it.
Just listen. Adolescence. It's adolescence.
So I started playing club, and I started playing 5-on-5, which was awesome. Played indoor when I was little. But yeah, it was a huge part of my life for a really long time.
Yeah.
And so... when things started shifting in 1999, which was 5 years after I graduated high school, it was amazing to see this national shift with women's soccer with the 99ers when they won the World Cup.
That was amazing.
It was phenomenal.
Your transitions into the topics we want to talk about are ridiculous. Rebecca Corey, who will be back. She's away right now. So we're doing these wonderful guest hosts. I literally just go, hey, how about that 99 World Cup? And she'll go, and I'll go, that's a transition. And then she screams out, I can't believe you're saying the word transition. I can't help it. So 99 World Cup really changed the game.
Absolutely.
For sure. Across the board for women's sports in general. But I remember following, you know, there was, you know, part of it was that we just watched the 99 documentary that was on ESPN, which I had been promoting for the last, you know, 12 podcasts. You know, such an amazing series of shows all summer long. And the 99ers, was that the last one or the second to last one something?
Yeah.
To me, obviously, that was my favorite because I was so... that has got to be, with all my teams that I'm obsessed with, probably like the top three or four teams spanning every sport, men's, women's sport, just as a team, it's got to be one of my all-time favorite
Absolutely.
Teams.
Absolutely.
And their story was phenomenal. And, you know, I had watched the game and everything, which we'll talk about. But the documentary was so cool because you got to see all those behind-the-scenes footage of all the women now that we haven't seen in 14 years.
Which is brilliant that it happened. Was it Foudy that actually was smart enough to get a video camera? So she was taping all these things unbeknownst to what was about to happen historically.
Yeah.
And so there's footage behind the scenes and in the locker room when Clinton, I mean, the president comes in. And they're just like, hey, Bill, like cheering. Hey, like he was just some guy off the street.
Yeah.
So the fact that that serendipitous moment that happened, that the filming was happening and then they win this, it was a perfect storm to change history for women's athletics, period.
Yeah, for sure.
Again, because so many people before them have changed, you know, Billie Jean King and all of these people have actually changed different sports. But for this was soccer that changed in our country permanently.
Yeah. And it was cool because in the behind the scenes footage, they were talking about how they had been to the World Cup in 95. They had been to the World Cup in 91. And in fact, that's when I say these things in the middle of the podcast and I go, Carol, fact check who won. But I know they at least won one of them.
I think it was 1991.
I think it was maybe 91. We'll fact check that. And when I say fact check that, I mean, Carol, probably won't. And I'll probably do it right now. So they're, you know, they had this really successful team and they were like some of the best players in the world, but it really took till 1999 to get that coverage, to get that footage. Yeah. And even when the tournament started, they were, I think, in Florida, you know, practicing for, you know, months at a time. They had no idea what to expect. It was the World Cup on U.S. soil and they were like, they didn't even know if there was going to be people at the stadiums when they went to the stadium,
which was amazing. For those of the listeners that actually saw it, there's a part where they show them on the bus and the announcement of saying that if tickets continue to sell like this, and I think it was something ridiculous, like when they knew they were going to the World Cup within like a 24-hour period, 35,000, like that number might not be right, but it was some obscene amount of tickets that sold overnight. And they told the girls the stadium is going to be sold out. I mean, it was in history the most attended women's athletic event ever. They had over 90,000 people in that stadium.
90,185.
It's unreal. I had some friends that drove from Albuquerque to Pasadena so they could watch it. They were there for it. I mean, it was unreal.
40 million Americans watched on television. Okay, so 1991, host country China. And the United States did win that, and that was the first title.
Which is interesting, because the 99 World Cup was also against China.
Yeah. I will never forget that game. First of all, let's just talk about watching that game. And, you know, since I've played soccer, and I was, you know, when I had moved to, and I think some of the podcast regulars will probably, like, I'd, you know, touch upon it briefly, but I had moved to Rhode Island, our family, not me, my family. I didn't just go on my own and move to Rhode Island when I was 12. I was like, you guys, I'm done.
I'm done.
I'm going to go find the state called Rhode Island. It's very populous. It's huge. But when I moved there, I was like a crazy, like softball pitcher. It was like all about softball and basketball to me. I'd never played soccer before in my life.
Oh, wow.
And so when I moved, it was this insane soccer town. And people's, like, their skill level was off the hook. I was like, I could barely kick the ball. So I thought, well, just from playing basketball and softball, I was like, well, I can catch shit.
Right.
So I'll start playing goalie. And then loved it. Then absolutely loved it. But it was, for me, even though basketball and softball were really my sports, but really basketball was my sport. And we played in high school championship games.
We were in the national Super Bowl for soccer.
I played basketball in the Super Bowl. It was really fantastic. So that's when I was just like, you think that would be the most stressful? For me, it was playing goalie because all these, you know, you're the last line of defense, obviously. And all these women were going on for like college scholarships. And I was like the last line of defense. And I don't think I slept for like 4 months. I mean, it was, we were playing Division I, you know, playing for the state championships all the time. And I was like, oh my God, like, this is it. Like, for me, that was the most stressful events, like, in sporting
events
in my life. Because I didn't want to, you don't want to let anyone down.
Well, it's weird because for some reason when you're a goalie, you know it's a team sport.
Yeah.
But in your head, you're like, I'm responsible for this not going into the net.
Yeah.
It's very strange. It's very strange.
Yeah. So you'd play soccer. And then in the 90s, like, I know there's a women's national team. But, like, there was just no coverage. There wasn't... a lot of, you know, people talking about it, you know? And then I guess maybe it was some exposure in the Olympics before that that sort of gained a little bit momentum. But I remember, you know, watching a couple of those early games in 99 of the World Cup tournament. Mm-hmm. And then it just, they kept winning. And it just became this sort of, I don't know, just like this fever pitch. And then they started just selling out all these games. And it just like, it just caught fire.
And what it did, and I think that it, this is huge, is it gave little girls in our country heroes to look up to.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't a lot in our generation of athletes that were really breaking barriers. It happened generations before with Martina in tennis,
yeah,
and Billy in tennis.
Yeah.
But all of these things, this was the first time where, and I do think this also has to do a little, I know you're going to look at me crazy, but it's socioeconomics.
Yeah.
There are different socioeconomic groups that play different sports because they can afford to. Tennis,
yeah,
was known as an upper echelon sport.
Yeah.
Soccer was the sport you played in the field, in the dirt, with cones that were often usually your little brothers and sisters,
yeah,
be like, don't,
yeah,
move and cover,
yeah,
your face.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And what it did is it gave all of these little girls someone to look up to. And initially it was Mia,
yeah,
because she was the top scorer.
Yeah.
Michelle Akers was right behind her,
she
but
was
this
amazing.
Was like, oh my God. And
yeah,
she was marketable.
Yeah.
And that's also what happened is that these female athletes started to get into media.
Yeah.
And you know, whether you like it or not, became the sex symbols as well as,
sure,
really strong women.
Yeah.
And I would much rather see really strong women as sex symbols than, you know, someone who maybe you need to eat more.
Yeah.
A sandwich.
Yeah. 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 Exactly.
You know, Carol, she doesn't eat. She's drunk
Carol
all the time.
Barely eats.
So whatever. I threw her a couple of almonds when we started.
Good.
And
good.
I
just
threw
a part of a ham hock at her face.
Yeah.
She needs to eat. Get some bread with gluten in it. Shove it in her face.
Not in this house.
Not in this
Anyone
house.
Anyone listening knows that you don't have gluten bread in your house.
I try. Yeah. But yeah, that was the most exciting thing. And then, so the documentary was super cool because I had heard that Mia was sort of this reluctant superstar, you know, mm-hmm, that Mia Hamm was this reluctant superstar. And then she was saying in the documentary that she was sort of the face of the team, but she was super shy.
Yep.
She didn't like giving out any of the interviews. She just wanted to get back on the bus and be with her two teammates. But she had to stay hours after the event and give all these interviews. And that could cause like a real rift in the team, you know? But because she was, I don't know, just really humble and obviously just wanted to be like a teammate first, it,
right,
seemed like it worked.
And they teased her. I mean,
yeah,
even in that they were like,
yeah,
there's Mia Hamm. We need, yeah, to get your autograph.
Yeah.
And that would have,
yeah,
driven me crazy.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I mean, that was a lot of weight on her shoulders.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, obviously, and we'll talk about it with the finals, is that weight shifted to other players.
Yeah.
And other players, you know, rose up to the occasion and,
yeah,
that they needed to.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was really sweet. I mean, watching Mia, if you've ever seen her interviewed, even back then, it was this really shy. I mean, she was 27 years old during that game.
Yeah.
So she's one of the veterans. I think Michelle must have been in their 30s, which was one of the,
yeah,
oldest players,
yeah,
before she
and
retired.
Her headers were unbelievable.
She was bandaged up at,
yeah,
one of those last games because she had split her forehead.
Yeah,
like, it was unreal.
Had to be removed from that last game with like a concussion,
yes,
or something like that.
So
yeah, it was pretty. And then just I just remember watching the game. I remember I was at my apartment. I was in New York City. And I literally could remember like it was yesterday. My sisters, they're not big sports fans. They like sports, but like obviously I'm like the junkie in the family. But it was such a big kind of sports family growing up that they were like, oh, I was like, come over and watch the game. So I had a bunch of people over. And the, you know, it was 0-0. Like, it was just like, who's going to score the first goal? So in the second half, I took out my New York Giants scarf. It's my lucky Giants scarf.
Sure.
I had it on in 1991 when the Giants played the Bills and Scott Norwood hit the field goal wide right and the Giants won. And I had that scarf on. So whenever in major sporting events in my life, when I know the team has to win, I take my Giants scarf out.
Maybe that's what actually put it over in the shootout. I mean,
well,
we don't know.
I really, listen, it could be all their hard work and skill, but you have to factor in the Giants scarf.
Yeah, you can't disprove that theory. You can't prove it, but you can't disprove
exactly.
that theory either.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm with you.
Yeah. So I had my Giants scarf on. You're welcome, 1999ers. Had my Giants scarf on, and I was grabbing my Giants scarf. Same scarf, by the way, that I had on at a Yankee playoff game. Aaron Boone, it said out in like the 13th inning, we beat the Red Sox. You're welcome, Yankees.
Well, now I feel like it's starting to be a theory.
No, it's... Yeah. It's pretty much the luckiest scarf ever, and it's tucked away in my closet. But I just remember like watching that game, and it was just moment after moment where it just felt like the game kept get larger and the stakes were larger. And then you think 90,000 people, and they were getting like, I remember hearing like ratings of the game, and I'm like, oh my God, like we have to win. If we don't win, it's almost going to be like all was lost. You
Unfortunately,
know?
Yeah, that's,
it was such a, like, and then going into overtime. And I remember right before the shootout, this is a play I'll probably remember for the rest of my life. Cause they, you know, of course they replayed it. But time and time again, you know, you have these heroes of Mia Hamm and Michelle Akers and Brandon Chastain and Brianna Scurry. But to me, the play of the game was Christine Lilly.
It was Christine Lilly.
The header out of the goal.
Oh, that was the moment where you could not be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
It could not have been planned. Yeah. She could not have known it was going to happen. She was in perfect position.
But that was her job. She was a sweeper or central back or something.
It was the best save that has ever happened in a professional sport. Period. It's been said that way online. People, you know, critics have said it. Her getting that out of the goal, because the game would have been over.
It would have never gone
into a shootout.
Yeah. I mean, for the people that didn't watch the game, it was probably second overtime with like mere minutes left to go before the shootout. And the Chinese, I mean, in all fairness, they were an amazing team. They could have easily won. They were so good.
Yeah.
And then you get like all that national pride and you're like, I hate the Chinese. You know what I mean? Of course, yeah. These women were phenomenal athletes in their own country.
And, oh yeah, we do. I don't like the food. There's MSG. Yeah. It's sticky.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, really,
it's delicious,
anti-China.
But you know.
And you realize they're just women and they're just trying to like, you know, do their own thing too. So, I mean, they were an amazing team. And then out of nowhere, cause they were putting pressure on us the whole game. It's not like we walked over any of these teams.
Right.
You know, one Chinese player just bangs it into the left side of the goal. And there's Lilly just
because
there.
Scurry wasn't there. She had been blocked. She didn't see the shot coming. And yeah. Lilly just happened to be there.
And so for me, I just would think like your first reaction
first reaction would be to put your hands up. Absolutely. Mine would be too. But if you're a sweeper.
But I'm just saying, yeah. You know, without a question, like you could catch the ball.
Yeah.
Right. And so then it would be a penalty shot for
that
team.
Right. Right.
But you know, at least the shot. And she so calmly jumps up and heads the ball out. I feel like I'm getting chills.
Unreal.
It was unreal.
Yeah.
She heads the ball out of the goal and saves the game.
Yeah.
Then it goes into overtime. I mean, it goes into a shootout. And I had heard this before, which they spoke about in the documentary, that Mia Hamm hated penalty shots. She just hated penalty shots. And DeChico was not the coach at the time, was not going to put her in the first five because she didn't have a lot of confidence taking penalty kicks.
Right.
And he sends his assistant coach over to Mia Hamm to ask her if she wanted to take the penalty kick.
Oh my God.
And she looked right at her and she was like, yeah, I'm going to take the kick. And Mia Hamm, I remember saying like, I didn't want to take the kick. I didn't want to take the kick, but I knew I had to take that kick.
Yeah.
And bangs it in and 4-for-4 and then Scurry. So I had never heard this perspective. And on the documentary, Brianna Scurry, our goalkeeper, who is ferocious, just amazing.
Ferocious.
She said that she didn't look at anyone. She didn't look at any of the Chinese players. And for some reason, she looked up one time, and it was the woman she eventually blocked. And she said, this one's body language.
Wow.
This one's body language doesn't look good to me. I can get this one.
This one's body language doesn't look good. She looks like a sketchy little striker.
She said that she felt like she was super nervous,
yeah.
And she could block this.
I think there's a sixth sense, especially. I mean, I know there's a 50-50, you dive one way or the other, period. I rewatched it, and I will say this. I actually teared up rewatching the shootout today before I came over for the podcast.
That's awesome.
And it's interesting because there were so many critics that were like, the goalkeeper came off the line.
Yeah.
Both goalkeepers came off the line on every
almost every
shot.
Single time.
Every
yeah.
single shot.
Yeah.
But of course, China's like, she came off the line and blah, blah, blah. She did come off the line, and so did every other shot,
yeah.
And every other goalkeeper yeah. came off the line. That moment was just, I mean, the when they showed Brianna after that and the excitement.
Oh, my God.
And it was that moment, too, that the country was like,
yeah,
wait a minute.
Yeah.
This is, this
we
this,
could win.
We could win.
We could win.
it was just unreal. And of course, I mean, we transitioned into the last penalty kick with Brandy, but.
Yeah, and then of course Brandi Chastain kicks it in and takes her top off, and it was the greatest moment in sports.
It was kind of one of the if there's a still shot of it is one of the best pictures that's ever been taken in it is sports.
You know, and also that shot to me was like, you know, this whole like feminine mystique of like ladies have to behave this way,
right?
But the wimp, like, you know, and it's not even like a gay thing or anything like that.
I mean, it's powerful.
It's this powerful woman who's straight.
Yep.
Takes her top off and just celebration like men do. And she's got this ripped body and she's stunning. It was like the most
perfect.
It was perfect
wonderful.
Of just like it's not like the new women. This has been happening forever, but it's that shot of like just women being so powerful and amazing in their own skin and equaling the success of men on and off the field. And it was one of my, you know, top two or three greatest sports moments of all time.
It was brilliant. What bothered me, and we knew this was going to happen, there was national backlash about the fact she took her shirt off.
Yeah.
And if it had been a guy, it would have never been an issue.
Oh,
it's not
God.
Like she didn't have a sports bra
she
on. That's
had
the
a
thing.
Sports bra on.
Which is what they practice. Come on. It was
so stupid. It was the greatest moment ever.
It was the greatest moment in sports. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, you have to think back, too, because that was 99, and the WNBA started in 96, right? Summer 96, summer 97, I think it was 96. And so that was great, too, because that, like, put women, like, I always go back to the little girl scenarios, too, because growing up, you know, I had all these posters of dudes on my wall. I was a big New York Giant fan, so I had Phil Simms and Lawrence Taylor and Steve Largent. He was a Seahawk, but I loved him.
Oh, my God, I love that you had athletes.
Don Manningly, and I just had just dudes all over my wall, because apart from female tennis players, which you couldn't even get a poster of, all I had was men's basketball. You know, I was a huge Celtics fan growing up. I was a Knicks fan, then Celtics, and then back to the Knicks, just where I was.
Loyalty. So you're loyal.
It was one of those things where you couldn't get the Knicks on TV and you could watch the Boston Celtics. So I was like, who doesn't love Larry Bird?
I watch Larry Bird.
So I watched Larry Bird, and I love those years being a
Celtics
fan.
Do you like him
fan.
As a coach? I know it's a little bit of effort.
I did.
Or did you like him as a coach when he was?
There's nothing Larry Bird, you know,
could
can't do
wrong.
That, you know what
Fair
I mean?
Enough.
But I was never like, I'm never going to be a Pacers fan,
right.
But you know, good for Larry Bird. But yeah, so you have the WNBA. And so I was like, this is so exciting because I used to go to Liberty games all the time when I lived in Manhattan. And to see all those little girls with those jerseys on.
Yes.
And that sort of, that like was like, oh my God, this is another viable option for female, you know, athletes playing basketball. You know, so you had the tennis, then you had the basketball. And soccer, of course, always existed. But then I thought like the momentum for the WNBA was exciting. And then, so I thought that helped in its own way.
Sure.
Propel women's soccer. But that, when that happened in 99, it felt like it opened the doors. And of course, we had all these female athletes from Olympics. So all this stuff obviously was happening forever.
Right.
But that, for some reason, because of the media and because we won in such dramatic fashion, I thought skyrocketed women's sports by 20, 30 years.
Absolutely.
It was just like the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
It was pretty spectacular. And we, you know, since that time, I think it has really opened up. And, you know, another thing we have to mention is that our country is not a soccer country.
No, which is, and we'll get it. I don't want to get too far into it.
No, we can do it right now. Yeah.
Well, it was interesting with the men's World Cup that's about to happen. And because we just beat Mexico where.
We never would beat Mexico.
I mean, that is their pride. That is their event. That is their sport. And for us to do that, I mean, the game was fantastic. And just to switch, and we'll go back to the Olympic, our present Olympic team or our last year Olympic team. The men, you know, watching Howard play goalie and his saves, he had two phenomenal saves in the first half.
What's up with that beard? I've never seen him with the beard before.
Yeah, it's a little distracting, but maybe that's what it's for.
Yeah,
I don't know. But
there's
no hair up top,
all
below. It's like a reverse mullet. I don't even know. It's like a men's mullet. I don't even know what it is. There's just bald up top, all below. That's all it is. And then Johnson's, the couple headers that we thought were going to go in.
Yeah.
That didn't. And then when the one actually went through.
He felt like he jumped 4 feet in the air.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
And I mean, such a beautiful man to watch play as. One of the things that I can say, I mean, clearly I have an affinity for female athletes.
The ladies.
For the ladies. However, there is a skill level and a strength and a speed just because of the way men are built.
Yeah.
That women cannot compete with.
Yeah.
And there's two things that go along with this. Sometimes because of that, women actually, and I know this, they have to rely on other things than strength and speed.
Yeah.
And so their skills can be a little bit more honed.
Yeah.
But men have the strength and speed that they can jump. Their vertical leap is 4 or 5 feet. Jesus, when he went up.
Yeah.
But it was gorgeous. And then he came down on a play just shortly after where he landed on his back. And it
that was
shook him
super,
up.
Super scary. Well, terrifying. He left the game. By the way, sports fans, what we're talking about is a U.S. men's national team. They beat Mexico last week to officially qualify for the World Cup in 2014. Sold out stadium in Columbus, Ohio, which is super cool to see.
It was wonderful.
And I think a lot of the success is my new favorite dude, Jürgen Klinsmann, who was a phenomenal national player for Germany. And now he's our coach. And I think he's a game changer. He's really brought that team together.
Aaron, tell us why he's a game changer.
Well, he's German.
That's been a game changer in other situations.
Not in a good way.
Yeah.
But this is a feel-good story coming out of Germany. I mean, when do you hear that sentence? Not that much.
Just today on Sports Without Balls.
Well, the thing is, we've had these staples of players, Josie Altidore and Landon Donovan and Dempsey and Marcus Beasley and Michael Bradley. And we've had the same core of dudes for a while now.
Sure.
You know? But Klinsmann comes in and I think he just brings this, fierceness and this like soccer lore.
Sure.
You know, and it almost like for the women's national team, when Pia Sundhage came in from Sweden, she was like the Sweden goddess, you know, of Swedish, women's national team. And I think it is this European mentality where in Europe, it's just soccer, 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 soccer. And I think it's sort of brought both teams to like another level. I don't know.
No, I agree with you. No, as you were speaking, I just realized that one of the things I think bringing it to that upper level is that for some reason in our country, there's a separation between country and sport. So our country is much more dominant when it comes to like militaristic things or other things that we pride ourselves on.
Yeah.
Not necessarily been sport. Those coaches bring a nationalism to their team. So it's this pride of this is our country. You are representing your country.
Yeah.
And so I think that brings everything up a notch. And that's not necessarily a bad thing to put into athletics if you're on a national team in the United States, because I think sometimes there was a separation and it started getting stronger of, all right, we are the United States and we can hang with these European powerhouses.
I mean, well, I'm not sure.
I think women's, I don't know,
I think it's going to be really interesting because notoriously we have a pretty good team. We most of the time make it to the World Cup and then we're out, you know,
like the first round,
the first round. But I have to say, I think another year playing together, I don't think the men's team don't have another game until November, but I think we have a legitimate shot of, let's just say it's going to be interesting. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how we can stack up against. I mean, Mexico won the gold medal last summer.
Right.
So it's not like, you know, listen, we're also playing teams like, Costa Rica and Panama. That's not Spain and France and Germany and stuff like that. But I think it'll be really interesting. I'm almost positive. Carol, fact check this. Get out of the closet, Carol. And it's not a gay, thing. She's drinking
again. She's really in the closet. I saw her go in.
She went in with a beer bong. Like, I didn't notice. Well, noticed? Past tense and a present sentence. That might have been the beer head that I put in her beer bong. Nobody panic. But no, I think you're right. It is this sense of, I mean, that team from Spain and France and Germany and Italy, it's like that's their whole life,
right?
Is soccer. And to bring that sense of pride and be like, you know, we got to take this to the next level, I think can be done.
That's one of the things that when there's a player that leaves their country to come play for the United States or vice versa, there's so much controversy because they're like, you left your country.
Yeah.
Like there's nationalism involved in that where like you're supposed to be loyal to your country.
Yeah.
But it's just so interesting. I mean, fans, soccer fans. I mean, back in the day when the even the World Cup was happening, you'd hear about these stories in Mexico where there was tramplings because the fans were like causing a riot. Because
oh, still to this day, still to this day. I mean, the hooliganism.
I know. And those were at the AYSO games, like the 6-year-old players and their parents losing their.
Yeah, there's been like stabbings.
It's actually pretty insane. Yeah, it is pretty insane.
It's crazy. I mean, yeah. I mean, listen. Here's my plan.
All right.
I want to know if you're in for this plan.
All right.
Next summer.
Yes.
No. In 2 years.
I'm in.
Sorry. 2015 Women's World Cup.
Okay.
I keep forgetting that we haven't won since '99 because we've had a couple gold medals in there.
And we keep looking at the picture every month.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And last summer was so absolutely fantastic.
Oh, we have to talk about that because the Olympics were amazing.
Now, and I remember, okay, so 2011, Women's World Team, a World Cup, we lose to Japan in the finals.
Right.
Which was absolutely devastating. But the game before, we played Brazil, one of my all-time favorite games, and that's the Rapinoe to Wombach header.
Oh my God.
Final
it was
seconds
phenomenal.
Of the game.
I'm obnoxious to watch soccer with because I will get up from where I'm sitting, charge the television, and scream at it.
Yeah.
As if I'm in the game.
Yeah.
In the stadium.
I can't watch sports in public.
I can barely. It's embarrassing.
I scream. There's this thing that, I'm gonna say because we're gonna work it out. Didi laughs at me. I will scream, "Come on!" Like I'll just and everyone thinks it's a bad thing, and I'm like, "No, that's my good thing."
Yeah, reinforcement.
And I'm like, "No one needs to see that. Like, no one needs me to start screaming." And then I get so flustered, and this is all sports across the board. Well, I pace. I can't sit. Sometimes I'll sit on a yoga ball so I can rock back
sure.
and forth. Like it's really like no one needs to see that.
Oh no! When I was watching the games because the Olympic games were some of them aired at a ridiculous time,
yeah.
8 or 3. I don't know in the yeah. morning, and my ex at the time. She was not my ex at the time. She is now. Would just laugh because
yeah.
she'd know I was yelling at the TV and what was happening. And,
yeah.
But it's funny, though, because she actually got excited about the games.
Yeah.
So she wanted to come watching with me because it's
infectious and exciting.
It really is
fantastic.
Infectious. Yeah.
And then we all gathered last summer for the gold medal match.
Ugh.
Between okay, here's the only silver lining when we lost to Japan in 2011. It was right after
the tsunami,
and I literally thought, if we lose to Japan, I'm never okay with it. I thought they needed something to cheer for.
Maybe I watched that game with you because I think we had this conversation.
I was in Las Vegas, actually.
Then I was in your hotel room inappropriately. then I wasn't watching it with
but
you.
But we watched the gold medal match last
I completely
summer.
Agree with you. I didn't
yeah.
mean to interrupt, but
yeah.
Japan needed it. And
yeah.
I don't want to get all hokey in the universe and all of this, but
yeah.
I wasn't that upset when they lost. Reason I wasn't that upset when they lost, they stopped playing the second half. The U.S. team backed off and just didn't show up.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to show up, you don't deserve to win. And if you're listening to this U.S. team, I don't mean that you didn't just show up because you were there. But something happened where Japan
well,
just
we got
kind
up
of
by
pulled
like,
forward.
I know. I felt like it was either we played like we didn't want to lose. But not like
not that
we
wanted,
weren't that aggressive.
Absolutely.
There was
That's
a
what
shift.
It is. That's a better way to
I
say it.
I also think we were so burnt out from that Brazil game.
Yep.
I mean, that was penalty kicks.
It was
kicks.
Exhausting.
It was so emotionally exhausting. And then to go into the finals, like, I think we were just tapped.
Yeah.
You know, I really think we were just tapped. And
that's fair to say, rather than they didn't show up. Because
yeah,
as an athlete,
just
I think
got
that
exhausted.
Everyone always shows up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it just Japan had that spark, and I just was like, I don't think we're going to do back-to-back penalty kicks.
Yeah.
Besides the fact this, and it sounds like a joke, and I'm exaggerating a little, but not really. During that Japan game, I kid you not, it was half our team is under sponsors on cornflakes boxes, whatever. And this is how they would describe the Japan team. Like a Japanese girl. I'm not going to say a Japanese name. I don't know their names. Let's just say it's, you know, the back striker, the fullback. You know, she finally got her legs, you know, back this tournament because she's been trying to find her cousin in the rubble for the last 60 days.
And it was, you were like, oh my God. Yeah.
It was the story. oh, well, that one, that's a good shot on goal. I mean, she just buried her grandmother from the nuclear reactor. So, and I'm like, I literally was gasping.
I was too.
And Japan.
And they were like, and if they win the World Cup, they're donating the small amount that they're getting for this back to the country. And I was like, oh, my God.
You were just crying the whole time. I kept feeling I should be cheering for Japan.
Yeah.
I literally was like, I felt horrible cheering for my own country. Because the stories, I just kept going, is this happening? I just hear that correctly. Like, that is, it was really like that intense.
And they would cut to like stories of them in their country, like playing on a dirt field as children. Like, that's all they had.
Yeah.
And that they don't have, and they get paid a dollar a game or something.
Yeah.
No, Aaron, it was amazing.
It was unbelievable. I was like, why am I cheering for my own country right now?
I'm surprised Sally Struthers wasn't refereeing the game.
It was so bad. I was crying the whole time. I was just like, so when we lost,
halftime show was just Sarah McLachlan. Yeah, playing it was just for the
we've
animals.
We got dogs from Japan that were too close to the reactor. They've got one eye.
Oh, we're going to hell.
And it was, oh my God, it was just it was exhausting.
Yeah,
it was exhausting.
Cut to Summer Olympics, though. We have now retribution because we're playing them again for the gold medal match because we showed up against Canada. That was an amazing
game.
That
was probably the best game of the tournament, I think.
Well,
Christy Sinclair.
Oh, it was Rapinoe. I mean, Rapinoe showing up for that game. I think she scored the second goal in that game that tied it up. And
I think
then
she scored both goals, didn't she?
She may have. And then Morgan's goal in overtime in extra time.
Yeah.
Alex Morgan making that. And wasn't that her first goal during a World Cup tournament or something like that? Like, it was huge. It wasn't just a really good goal at a really good time. Like, for her, it was the goal.
Yeah. I think she had scored before, but that one put her on the map.
I mean, Wambach was leading her headers in the last minute. I can't.
Yeah, it was
the whole team's such phenomenal to watch.
And I think
now.
Canada, I think the good news for, like, just, you know, competitiveness is they have a new coach for Canada, and Canada is going to be super fierce. They should have won that game.
They were.
And Christy Sinclair blew me away. She got a hat trick that game for Canada, and now she plays for the Portland Thorns. And the Portland team just won the National Women's Soccer
League. Oh, well, that's not surprising.
Oh, well, first of all, that team was completely stacked, and it was completely unfair. I mean, good for Portland, and they were awesome.
Sure.
And I had no, like, team like that, you know, they had to win. But it just felt like the New York Flash had Carly Lloyd and Abby Wambach, two obviously the best of the best. And Portland had Alex Morgan, Tobin Heath, Christy Sinclair, Megan Rapinoe. Rachel Buehler. I mean, it was
crazy.
It was totally stacked. But anyway, I think we're in good shape. We have to switch. We have to switch some gears because we're getting close to the end.
Oh, goodness.
But here's my proposition for you. 2015, and all the listeners. 2015 Women's World Cup is in Canada. We're going to get Winnebagos. I'm taking the month off. It's like the end of June. No, it's the beginning of June to the beginning of July. And I'm going city to city in Winnebago.
Let's do this.
And we're going to see every game.
Let's do it.
Are you in?
I'm in.
Dana Goldberg is in.
Can we get a shower in the Winnebago? Is there a shower in the Winnebago?
Yeah. And the Winnebago will be parked outside of really nice hotels.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Perfect.
Okay.
All right.
Because we're still ladies.
Yeah.
I want to touch upon this. It's all right. Yes. All right. So we'll wrap this up soon. I want to touch upon this. This is really exciting. Is the WNBA playoffs start Thursday? I'm a huge women's basketball fan. Rebecca Corey thinks it's like watching paint dry, but I'm going to take her to one of these games.
Oh, she's going to love it.
Phoenix plays LA Sparks, LA People, Los Angeles. They play at home this Thursday, and Phoenix, I have to say, I've been a Diana Taurasi fan for so long because I've been a UConn fan for so long. So that's going to be a great game. And Taurasi and Griner against Candace Parker and crew in L.A. The other teams out of the West are Minnesota and Seattle. And Minnesota literally almost did a three-peat. They got beat by Indiana last year. But their team is stacked. Lindsey Whalen, Maya Moore, they're playing Sue Bird in Seattle.
Brilliant.
Which is going to be super fun. East Side, Washington Mystics. I don't know. I have to say, Washington people don't know your team that well. I just know Ivory Latta because I remember watching her play in North Carolina and then in the All-Star game because she's got like the world's biggest eyes. And she's like 5'2", and she's like a spitfire.
You have to pay attention.
She's pretty awesome. Plays Atlanta Dream. Angel I always pronounce her name wrong. McCautry, I think. This woman is so good, it's insane. She's vying for MVP of the league.
What school did she come from?
I don't know where Angel McCautry played.
Carol!
Oh, my God. In sync. but she's been in the league for at least 10 years. But I feel like it was a Southern team she played for, like a, not like a Baylor. I don't know. I'm making shit up at this point in time, but she's awesome. And the other two teams, this is going to be probably my favorite series, is Indiana, last year's champs, against the Chicago Sky. And the Chicago Sky have my favorite player, Elena Deladon.
Where's Elena from? Yeah, I know you'll know this one.
She played for Delaware.
There you go.
But she's in a really interesting story because she was a number one pick for UConn and never played with UConn. Decided she just kind of imploded, wow. Too stressed out, didn't want to be away from home, couldn't play for the first year, only played 3 years for Delaware, and brought them to the Sweet 16, basically passing it to herself, shooting herself, getting the rebound, and then putting it back in. And Chicago's in the playoffs for the first time in 7 years.
That's awesome.
It's pretty smoking awesome.
You like the underdog?
I love the underdog. So I'm going to root. I'm rooting for Chicago. I'm rooting for the LA Sparks because my New York Liberty, they didn't do so.
No,
this year.
We won't talk about
and
it.
And now I live in LA, so I'm going to go with the Candace Parker.
Yeah, because we already talked about this. Whatever comes up on TV.
And and Chicago. So WNBA playoffs. Maybe I'll drag you to the game on Thursday.
You won't have to drag me.
Fantastic. Okay, so here's the deal. Football just started. My Giants are 0-2. There's a line in ESPN.com said, should the New York Giants be worried that they started 0-2?
Yeah,
because we kind of suck. It was the Manning Bowl on Sunday, Peyton versus Eli.
I heard there was an awkward, like, greeting between the two of them. As that would be hard.
It would be so hard.
Oh, the sibling
Peyton's
rivalry?
Beat us
come on.
Three games to nothing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I cheer for Peyton as well. I love Peyton Manning.
It's a good family.
Next week, it's kind of like a dream. They're doing an entire documentary on like the Manning brothers. And I'm going to cry the whole time.
You are.
There's a couple exciting things that I'm going to watch. This Friday is a Showtime special on Lawrence Taylor.
Ooh.
My favorite linebacker of all time for the New York Giants. LT. He had a small cocaine problem.
Oh.
And he's been in and out of jail.
Like
but I still
a Darwin
love him.
Small cocaine problem or just like an L.A. small cocaine problem?
I think there was a lot of cocaine use in the 80s.
Sure.
In the linebacker section of every team.
Yeah.
I think they did a little bump and then they went a little crazy on the field.
All right.
I think I'm going to bring it back for stand-up comedy. I'm just going to start doing a lot of coke and talking even faster than I talk.
Great.
Kidding. I would never do that.
I know you wouldn't.
Are you a drug person?
Yeah, no, I'm going to just say no. I got high once in my entire life. I ate pot from a cookie. I ate a pot cookie. I didn't eat pot from a cookie.
I
just picked out the
pot
pieces.
You are really
pieces.
Not a drug person. Yeah. You just said you ate a pot.
Happened at Dinosaur when I was 32 years old.
Wow.
I ate too much and I might have had a horrible time. I had fits of euphoria and then I turned into the most paranoid person you could imagine.
How long did it last?
About 12 hours.
12 hours?
I actually accused the people I was with of stealing something from the house we went to.
No. Oh my God.
Oh, Aaron, it was amazing. I literally had a conversation with myself after I was so high and everyone in the house that I came into contact with that sounded like this. I have a question for you.
Shh.
If I was high, and I'm pretty sure I'm not, but if I was high, would I be able to say to myself, Dana, you're high, you're having paranoid thoughts, it's the drugs. And they would go, uh-huh. And I'd say, then I'm pretty sure I'm high. I have a question for you. If I was high and I'm pretty sure I'm not.
Oh my.
For 2 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. There you go. The kids, if you're listening,
no
just
drugs.
Say no.
No drugs.
That's what happens. Oh, as a comic too, I was like that whole thing
Can
of like brain
being
cells.
On stage?
I was like, I'm not going to remember my stuff. I can't remember my material. I smoke pot. I ate pot and I can't remember my material.
I can't even imagine being high. I have like a half a glass of wine and I slur.
I do not know how people. Oh, me too. Yeah. I can't drink before my shows.
I can't do anything.
The only time I drank in the last couple years during a show was I had gotten into a car accident on the way to my show in San Diego, and I was like, let's do this because I'm drinking Jameson
right.
while I'm performing, and it was one of the funniest hours ever.
Wow.
That was great.
Yeah, I haven't done that. Haven't done that yet.
No.
I took mushrooms before a bachelorette party in 1999 or 2000, and I thought I didn't want to leave the house because I thought the house was surrounded by the FBI. And it was a really painful situation because I didn't want to be there. The bride was like, and I was like, I'm going to do shrooms. And boy, did that not end well.
No.
Because I thought the FBI was surrounding the house.
Well, I
thought. Hey, kids, no drugs.
When you do shrooms, which I've never done, that you have to be in a super good mood the whole time. Otherwise, it goes terribly bad.
I had too many.
Oh.
I was in a really good
mood.
Like
a whole bag.
I had a lot. And then I was like, you guys, we can't go back out. I mean, this place is surrounded. And everyone's like, what happened to Foley? I was like, what happened to you? We're surrounded.
Does anyone object to these two people being binded in holy matrimony? Yes, there's people outside with guns.
They're not going to, they can't agree with your union. There's shotguns pointed at your head. Oh, I was a hot mess. I was a hot mess.
I had a friend that knew that if he was like way into chemistry, so he knew that if he ate marigold seeds, they would give him a high. So he ate marigold seeds and then he sat for 2 hours and read newspapers off of a wall that didn't actually exist. The wow. newspapers weren't there. And then he had a fight with the bush outside of his house because he thought the bush had stolen his sunglasses.
Oh my God.
So he
Amazing.
Was outside for half an hour screaming at the bush.
Oh, drug stories are the best.
Yeah.
Don't do drugs. Stay in school. This is our last story. I am amazed. I read a lot of different stories about sports because I'm obsessed. The money in sports is unbelievable. Floyd Mayweather this past weekend. I can't stand Floyd Mayweather. He's probably one of the best boxers of all time. Did a little stint in jail last summer for domestic violence. $41 million. He won the fight. $41 million. The loser of the fight, this guy Canelo from Mexico, $12 million. Should I start boxing is my question to you, Dana Goldberg.
You have a nice face, so I'm not sure that's a great idea. It's insane what it, and I'm not taking it away from professional athletes in the sense of what they do well. I just have this whole contribution to society thing where teachers are making $40,000 a year.
It's, you ready for this one?
It makes me angry. Please continue.
Cristiano Ronaldo, hottest man.
Beautiful.
Plays for Real Madrid. He's from Portugal. Plays for obviously the Portugal national team. Just got a contract, $21 million a year. He makes $537,000 a week.
I mean, who doesn't? Soccer. I mean,
playing
who doesn't?
Soccer, and we get paid in drink tickets. I get paid in, like, muffins and drink tickets.
Scones.
Scones.
And the scones are a good night. That's when you know you killed
Scones. I almost said scones. I get paid in Chuck E. Cheese coins and scones.
I can't really have a
$537,000 playing soccer.
Yes.
So what did I do wrong? I mean, my goal in my life is to play wide receiver for the New York Giants.
You chose to follow your dreams, Erin Foley.
But my dream was to play wide receiver for the New York Giants.
Oh, well then.
It probably won't happen because I've got a bad back.
That's true.
But $537,000 a week.
You could buy
a
new back.
In the net.
That's unreal.
We need sponsors.
Ooh, let's get sponsors. I think we might have lost the Chinese food sponsors in the middle of the podcast.
Because you screamed out. There's MSG and all their food.
Not all of it.
Well, a lot of it.
DuPont,
it's not like a feel-good
food. I heard Panda Express, no MSG.
What?
That's what I heard. And I heard it from a very reputable source. And every time I go to an airport and I'm like, you know what? Chinese food sounds good, but it's going to make me sick. No MSG in Panda Express. Swear to God.
Is that even real Chinese food?
Look it up. Carol!
Oh, well, okay, hold on one second. Oh my gosh, she's responding.
That's the first time
I'm sort of responsive. People of the world, I'm not saying you should box, but $41 million makes me want to grab the gloves and start.
But then you see the stories of like Muhammad and as he got older and you're like, do you even know at that point that you have that much money? And does it really make up for the brain damage that's been caused after getting hit in the head?
Right now, smack me in the head for $1 million. Take your shots. Take your best shots.
I would say that someone punched me for $500,000, I think.
$10,000. Punch me in the moneymaker.
Yeah.
You can go ahead. Take out my leg. Sweep my leg.
Aaron,
to $5,000.
Aaron, which part of you is the moneymaker?
I don't know.
Oh, in your mouth.
Apparently in the mouth and the forehead area.
Yeah.
And my knees. My left knees. I've got
your left knee's
kneecaps.
A moneymaker. They're gorgeous.
Can you imagine? Don't hit me in the kneecaps. That's where I make the money.
One of my favorite jokes that I've never told on stage, and hopefully you won't get in trouble for this, but Mariah Carey.
Yeah.
Mariah Carey actually insured her legs for $1 million. This was like 10 years ago. She insured her legs for $1 million. And I heard that she was going to actually try and insure her face, but they won't cover a pre-existing condition. So it's just the left side. Just the left side. No one's ever seen Mariah Carey's left side of her face. Do you even know what it looks like?
Really?
Look at pictures. Her hair is always in front of her left eye or right eye. I mean, she's a brilliantly talented Mariah, if you're listening.
Wow.
One, I know you're a fan of sports.
Yes.
Two, your voice is amazing. And three, I'm really curious about what your other eye looks like.
I just assumed it looked like the other one.
Who knows, though? We have a foster dog that has one blue eye, one brown eye. There's a possibility they don't match.
Weird that you're a lesbian with a foster dog.
Well, I'm staying with... I fostered a blind chihuahua once, and I read up because I'm like, how do you take care of this dog? And they're like, sometimes the chihuahua gets stuck in spaces and you have to direct it out because it's disoriented. And I'm like, oh my God, we're fostering a Roomba. Like, I'm fostering a Roomba that's actually putting dog hair down instead of picking it up. Like, I didn't.
Wow. Yeah. That is, listen. It takes a village.
It takes a village of lesbians to raise foster dogs.
It does. I just wish we were getting paid $537,000 a week to do stand-up comedy. I do stand-up comedy for a living. My left hand grabs the mic. I'm going to insure my left hand for $8 million.
I have $5,000 in my savings account, and I will punch you in the face.
Okay. And then...
And give that to you. If you need it that badly.
Yeah. Well, yes. Then go ahead. Let's put these mics down and punch me in the face for $5,000.
Totally.
That's probably the best way to end the show, I think.
I think domestic violence is a great way, is a great way to end. And let's just take it down on that. Don't do drugs. Be safe. And if you can make some money getting hit in the face,
yes,
please take the opportunity.
I think we really brought the show full circle.
Oh my, I feel good about this.
I feel great. I mean, listen, if you're out there, watch some WNBA playoffs, maybe get hit in the face for $5,000. Support the women's soccer because they're absolutely amazing. And Dana Goldberg, where can they find you?
You can find me on danagoldberg.com. And if I have listeners in Chicago, I'm in a huge competition on the 24th Tuesday. And come out and support. Yes. So I'd love to have it there. I don't know when this airs, but I'm assuming.
Where's the show?
At Zany's.
Zany's in Chicago, September 24th. Go see Dana Goldberg. You are a delight and a pleasure, a boat and a dream boat.
Aaron, thank you so much for having me on. And all the listeners anytime. Out there, hey, keep playing. Keep playing without the balls.
Keep playing without the balls. Thank you, listeners, and have the best week of your lives.